This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Three Down Nation podcast. Today, we're joined by Jim Barker, now back with the Toronto Argonauts for what I believe is a fourth stint. Is that correct, Jim?
Yeah, I guess you could call them stints. It's the fourth time I'm back in the office, so very excited about it.
Well, congratulations, and I want to start off by asking a very serious, hard-hitting question, which is this. According to your bio, you're 69 years old, and yet maybe outside of Mark Killam, you've got the best head of hair in the Canadian Football League. What is your secret? Because guys like me need all the help we can get.
You know, all those years people were worried about sun and those kind of things. I never did. I let my head breathe. Never coached with a hat. That was my key.
Well, hey, putting a hat on that would have been a crime. So
I think God, we all gave me, it. God gave me one great thing. He really gave me great hair. You can't cover up God's gift to you.
Well, God also gave me one great hair follicle. The problem is that it was just the one. So I appreciate your insight on the hair. That's great. But on a more serious note, you are back with the Toronto Argonauts, and I believe you've lived full-time in Toronto for a long time, mm-hmm. correct, Jim? I know you're originally from California. How long have you been in Toronto?
Well, I bought a place here back in 2010 when I came here and was here until 22, and then or 21, I went and lived in Las Vegas for a year, and then Pinball called me to come back in 22. So, but I've been here pretty much since 2010 in Toronto. And when I was working with TSN, it was, it was close for me to, to jaunt to the studio. So it's been, this has been home since 2010, I would say. I spent 1 year living in Vegas and with where my kids and my grandkids live. And, but I would say I've been a Toronto resident that long.
Well, hey, 2010, pretty good time to buy Toronto real estate. If you don't mind me saying, I mean, you're going to do well on that. So that's great. Yeah. You reportedly had interest from Hamilton, right? You obviously have been out of football ops for a couple of years, more on the media side. We'll touch on that in a moment. How did it feel to kind of get back in the game? Were you ever worried that another opportunity might not arise with one of the league's nine teams?
Well, sure. You always worry about it. Yeah, for me, because I did want to keep going. I mean, I'm not ready to retire, and I just don't feel whatever my age says I am. It just doesn't seem to me to be where I'm at. And I've stayed real close with the personnel, and it's just kind of more of a hobby that I just love following it and players and where they're coming from and what they're doing. And so, probably the last 4 months I've worked hard on, trying to make sure I was up to speed so I didn't walk into an office and couldn't contribute. I really didn't have interest in being a consultant again. I kind of look at that whole consultant thing. I've done it twice, and you're kind of an intern with gray hair. That's kind of how I look at it. You know, they listen a little bit, but you're really not a part of it. And so I just wanted to be a real part of it, and I'm getting that opportunity. Pinball has basically allowed me to come in and, what I've gotten the most joy out of is watching young Canadian guys grow in this business. And there's four of them that came work for us here in Toronto and are now in the NFL. You know, Chris Rossetti with the New York Giants, Curtis Ruccovino with the Buffalo Bills, Vince Magri with the Buffalo Bills, and then Matt Houston, who was an intern for us for 4 years. He's with the New York Giants. So, the New York Jets. So, you know, I'm proud of that. And that's something that I've always felt that we need to have those opportunities for youngsters to grow who want to get in. It's a very difficult business to break into. And, you know, I got into the business onto this side, more of the personnel side, back when I was in Calgary in 2000. I got fired in 2003. Stayed in Calgary for personal reasons, with one of my daughters in 2004, did a football school and enjoyed that. And then in 2005, John Frusciante said, "Jim, can you be the GM?" I said, "Absolutely, I can." And I had never done it, but I kind of went into the GM thing different than most coaches. I had been nothing but a coach. Usually as a coach, you get the double job and they, you know, to make it so it, you know, it's, more financially. That was never my thing. Don Matthews once told me, he said, "The one thing you don't want to be as a head coach is also the general manager, because when you go in the locker room, you're looked at differently when you're on their money side." And Don always felt like it was important for him to be able to walk in and be one of them and not be on the money side. So that was never my intention, but when Frusciante offered me that job, I just immersed myself in that and actually, you know, was the only person there in 2005. They cleaned house. It was after Federick sold the team to them. And so I was by myself. And then I hired Brendan Mahoney, who's still in Calgary. And then the second year I hired John Murphy as a U.S. scout to kind of, you know, be kind of like what Paul Jones does. That's what he did while I was there. And then when Huff came in 2008, he wanted to be the head coach and general manager, which he certainly deserves. So I just changed my title from general manager to senior vice president, but did the same things, and then got the opportunity to come to Toronto back in 2010. So my career I immersed myself in being a GM. Now, those years in Calgary from 2005 to 2010, I did nothing but be a GM. And then in 2010, I was coach GM. I was both in 2010 and 11. And by the end of 11, you cannot do it, you know, the right. I could not do it. I could not be the kind of GM I was in Calgary and also be the head coach in Toronto. I had to make a decision. And so I fired myself as the coach in 2011, and we hired Scott Milanovich, and then fortunate to win the Grey Cup in 2012. So my background's a little different than most. I immersed myself in GMing, and like I say, the personnel side I find intriguing. I love taking the young guys and growing them, and I'm going to do the same thing here. You know, the way that the CFL has put caps on the amount of money you can spend. You know, it's conducive to bringing young guys in. Back in the day of Rossetti, they could work for nothing. They could be interns and be, you know, grunts like I was. And it's been fun with Mike Miller here as the coach, because he's the same way. We talk about those jobs we held back when we were coaching so we could be in the office all the time but still have enough to pay the rent. So I was a security guard. He loaded trucks at UPS. And, you know, it was just that's how you grew up in this business. And I think it does a lot to shape you. You can't do that anymore in Canada. So, again, you have to take, you know, again, it's one more thing with and the numbers. There's a numbers thing in the cap, the numbers of people you can have. So even if you pay guys minimum wage, you can still only have so many youngsters to learn. And, you know, I've got two that are going to come in January, two young guys that enthusiastic and ready to go. And, you know, we're going to hit the trail in Florida. I'll go with them all through January, will go to all the All-Star games, and they will get a feel for how to become how to run a personnel office, and take that to wherever it is they want to go.
Can you share any identities yet of these individuals?
No, because none of that. When you work in a place like MLSC, it is very corporate. So
fair,
I don't know. I really don't know much about anything when it comes to things like that. So I know that they know they're coming on January the 2nd or 1st. Well, the January 2nd, and hopefully everything will go smooth, and we'll get two of them on a plane on the 5th to go to Florida for the Hula Bowl. Watch John Gruden, groom those youngsters. I think there's about 8 Canadians going to be at the Hula Bowl in Florida. You believe that? The Hula Bowl is not even in Hawaii anymore. I remember the days it was great to go to the Hula Bowl. And then I'll fly with one of the other youngsters, and we'll go to Dallas. The Hula Bowl guys will meet, the other guy and me in Dallas for the CGS, where I think there's 15 Canadian guys. Plus, there's a lot of players there that will become CFL players, much more so than the Senior Bowl and the Senior Bowl and the East-West Shrine Game. Those guys are going to go through a couple cycles in the NFL, mm-hmm. and you normally get a chance to scout them in the preseason, and you can, do those kinds of things. So those aren't as important, but these other ones, there's the Hula Bowl, the CGS game, the Tropical Bowl, there's the American Bowl that's new this year. So there's a lot of games to go. It's great to be able to have these young guys and be able to teach them how you scout a game, or scout a practice, because you got so many players you're trying to track and how to do that. And so we'll go through that on the 3rd and 4th before they take off, and then they'll get off and get into it. So I'm really looking forward to that. That part of it is taking these youngsters and growing them into, top-notch people that, 10 years from now are going to be the GMs in the CFL, I would hope.
You talked about your history with Murph, who obviously was let go or not brought back post-2025. But you've got this history with Huff. You've obviously got this history with pinball. And you also mentioned that in a front office, right, responsibilities can fall all kinds of different ways, right? General manager can mean a lot of different things. So I'm curious, between pinball and yourself and Huff, how do you plan to distribute a lot of the responsibilities that you need to do to be a successful CFL team day in and day out?
I don't plan to distribute any of them. He's the GM. And it's his job to distribute. And Huff, I know I've spoken to him. My deal is personnel. Huff will be involved both in personnel and coaching. And he's an advisor to pinball, advisor to Mike Miller, and he'll help us with personnel. So I'll kind of give him the things that we want to do in personnel, and he's got great contacts and obviously a great evaluator of talent. We got along great in Calgary, so that we're going to be able to continue that. I can send players to him and say, give me your thoughts on these guys. And that's another avenue. But I'm personnel. I'm focused on the personnel in the office, and the young guys will be involved in personnel. We do have a youngster who's here, Marcus Grandison, who basically started very much like Vince Magri. I hired Vince as an assistant video guy. Then he became the head video guy. And then went from that, because he'd do all the cut-ups of the Canadian players. He learned how to watch film and how to pick, good plays, bad plays on a player. And it teaches you how to evaluate players. And he's as good as I've been around of all the guys there. He's been the best in terms of grinding film. You can put Vinny into a room for, hours, and he's happy as a lark, and he grinds through film, and he will come out with a couple of great players. He just has that's a gift that he has and is evaluating film. So, and he's now doing that with the Buffalo Bills. So, you know, it's everybody has their own talents and they have to fall into the area. Marcus is expanding from being an assistant video guy, which he's been here, and he's peripherally helped, and he's now becoming like a right-hand man. He's working hard on it. Melissa Frith is a woman who runs the football operations, and she runs it. I mean, we had Ian Sanderson, who's now the head of the CFLPA, and I thought Ian was as good as it got, and Melissa's she's just on top of everything, and you know, she wants to learn to see film. She doesn't want to be a scout. She wants to be the best football operations person. And I think that's such a big thing, is you gotta want to be the best at something. And that's what she wants. Her aim is. And I mean, I've never worked with somebody like her that's as efficient. So, you know, there's some really good people here already. And, in terms of what everybody's going to do, you have to ask Pinball that, because that's all his job. He told me he wanted me to direct up the personnel. That's what I'm doing. So, but in terms of those other things of how I'm not delegating anything to anybody.
Fair. Yeah. And I know your title is director of player personnel. I just know that, to be a GM, you have to do 100 different things. And some people say, well, these 30 are my pet things. And then these are another 20 I'm willing to do. And then here's how the other 50 are going to be divvied up. So it's right. Interesting to hear. It sounds like you're doing a lot of on the ground scouting. It sounds like you're going to be grinding film, focusing on that. Any contract negotiations in there as well?
Well, yeah, that's personnel.
Absolutely.
So okay. The contract negotiations, the salary cap, and these young guys need to learn that. They need to learn how to manage a cap and how to follow it on a daily basis. And I was lucky back in 2005 when the salary cap was being developed. It was the guy who was the main developer of that was Ted Hellard, who was one of the owners of the Stampeders back then. There was 12 owners led by Frizzani, and Dave Sapungis was one, but Ted Hellard was a key one, and he was very instrumental in putting the whole salary cap thing together. So I learned from him, and he was a great help to me to understanding how to manage that. And on a daily basis, he would come in and say, "Okay, right now we've got to move this guy to the injured reserve. Where are we on our cap?" And he wanted a number. He wanted to know, well, this will put us 80,000 under instead of 130 that we were. What he wanted a daily accounting. So that's the way I learned it. And again, he even set up the table that I use and things. So it calculates out on a daily basis based on who's going to be on the roster, who got the play time. In contracts in the CFL, a lot of players have play time. So if a player gets injured, there's so much money he doesn't make, but that goes to another player who replaces him. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of keep track of, yeah, you have to do it. It's it's a daily thing. It's you miss a day. It's like missing a day of shaving, although you wouldn't know, but
no,
but you miss a day of shaving and you can tell. Well, that yep. Same thing happens with the cap. You miss a day on it. You could tell because now you're scrambling to get caught up. So, you know, those are the kind of things that I think that, you know, it's good to teach these young guys that personnel is about being able to evaluate players. There's no question. But it's also about recruiting. How do you entice them to come up here? I mean, mm-hmm. Talking to a player about the values of this over the UFL or trying to wait for the NFL and just the ability to recruit, I think, is often overlooked. And that's something that we try to work with these guys. And like I say, I like having them right there where they can hear the way I talk to agents and the way that I talk to players, prospective players coming up. I just think that's an important part of personnel that sometimes it's hard to learn if you don't have somebody there who's done it before. So, you know, I get excited about this kind of stuff, John.
That's great.
Much more so than doing what you're doing, which I've been doing for the last bit.
Well, let's talk about Mike Miller for a second. You talked about, you know, touching base with him. I don't think outside of, I guess, 2012, he's someone you'd previously work with, but he's obviously a riser in this league, now a first-time head coach in this league. I'm curious what your impressions have been with him, and with some reported changes to the coaching staff, does he have the full autonomy to set that the way that he wants it?
Again, he's working with Pinball and Huff on that, and I have not been involved in that. I was with Mike here in 22. We won the Grey Cup when I was a consultant. So again, I count it because I was there. Worked with Alex Russell, who's now doing great things in Hamilton, and Vince Magri was still here then. So it was the three of us that in 22 basically ran the football personnel. And Mike was here then. So I got to know Mike then. And again, I'm older than he is, but our backgrounds are so similar. We've crossed a lot of the same people. He has experience as a coordinator with the Arizona Cardinals. He's been with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's been around the table with the kinds of, you know, interesting arguments that happen. I think the hardest thing, and one of the things I try to teach guys who haven't coached, is the relationship between between coaches and personnel people, because it's so easy to say, you know, it's his fault. It's not me. It's, it's, you know, and when you're a personnel person, you know, because the question that comes from a top is this a personnel issue? We don't have good enough players, or is this a coaching issue? And if you don't understand both sides, just like coaches need to understand personnel people, I tell the personnel people, you need to sit at the coach's table, because it's like if you're in a place where they speak French and Spanish and you only speak English, if you don't go sit at the French table, you're never going to be able to understand French. Well, if you don't go sit at the coach's table, you're never going to understand how they're – if you tell a coach, you know, well, that guy just has no ankle flexibility, you know, a tackle – you know, the coach is going to look at him like, I don't care about his ankle flexibility. But you go sit at the scouts table and they're saying, did you see that guy? He couldn't bend. He can't move out of his stance because he's got no ankle flexibility. I mean, that's a big thing in the personnel. So there's things personnel people talk about that to coaches, it's like, they don't hear it. Mm. And the whole key to this is the communication between personnel staff, a lot of who have never coached, and coaches who haven't been one myself. We all have huge egos, and you have to know how to get the most out of the coach and get to understand what it is he wants. Our job as personnel people isn't to find people we think are good. It's to find people that will fit to the coaching staff that we have. And I think so often you watch that in the NFL and you watch players who get with the right coordinator or head coach. I mean, you look at Caleb Williams, he's what he's done now that he's with the right coach. You look at Drake May, he goes to a place where Josh McDaniels is there. And if that guy isn't as close to Tom Brady in terms of the kind of, as you would visualize a guy coming out of college, that this is another Tom Brady type of guy. He plays the same style. He runs well enough. Great athlete. Very smart. Just a great leader without – he doesn't need to say words to lead. That's the way Drake is. And he's just a spectacular – I had lunch with him his senior year in high school. I had a side gig where I was coaching quarterbacks all across the country. And I met with he and his dad, and they weren't sure whether he was going to go to North Carolina during his spring of his senior year or not. And if he wasn't, then they wanted me to come in and work with them. And I would work with mechanics, and then I would, you know, teach them how to watch film, look at the game from a coaching perspective, and help him with all phases of it. So I had lunch with the young man it was in December of his senior year, but before he had decided he was going to go. And I called my partner and I said, I just sat with a guy who's going to be the first pick overall in an NFL draft whenever he decided to come out. That's how impressive a young man Drake May is. So, you know, it's all where if Drake May goes to the Raiders and, you know, with whatever happened with Chip Kelly, what's Drake May right now? Is he, you know, well, he was a bust or who knows? Who knows? Maybe he would have been great and made Chip Kelly great. You know, I think it's so much of matching coaches with players is crucial. Mike Miller has a phenomenal relationship with Chad Kelly. Chad Kelly had one horrible game that I can remember when he was healthy, and that was that Eastern Final. Well, people may not know, but Mike Miller was gone for 2 weeks prior to that game and for that game undergoing cancer treatment. And now has that licked, but he wasn't there with Chad. And Chad was just having that coach that gets you, that can say the right things to you, is so important. And again, I think he has a tremendous rapport with him, and that is a great start when your head coach and your quarterback have that blend. And I know all the players I've talked to, I've tried to call a lot of the guys who were under contract and things like that. They all have utmost respect for Mike and what he's done in his career. He's going to be a very different from Ryan Dinwiddie. I mean, you know, this is a Pittsburgh guy. You know, he's just different. And so our team, I believe teams, when you have good coaches, teams become a reflection of them. And Mike Miller is a tough, hard nose. He's going to beat the hell out of you in the line of scrimmage. Those are the things that I believe in. When I look at teams, I talk about, and I did on the air at TSN, you know, they used to give me, because I'd always talk about the O-lines and the D-lines. And I know in 22 here, when we had Flo Arimolade, he made Dwayne Hendricks and Sean Oakman and Robbie Smith, and those guys became great players because of what that guy did and the leadership he had. They all went to other places, and they've been good players, but they haven't been the way they were with him. So getting that right blend of people is so crucial, and that's what we're going to try to do. And Mike sees the game just like I do, which is, that's been the funnest part of the job so far. Is, you know, we had to drive to a thing last night for an hour and a half in the car, and, you know, we're going through situations, and would you go for one or two in this kind of deal, and what with the new rules that are coming in, and the 35-second clock, and, you know, how that's going to change the game way more than people are, you know. And when you have somebody who sees the game the way you do, it's fantastic. So I had that with Scott Milanovich, who had played for me, and to just fall into it with Mike Miller is, I'm, like I said, I'm blessed. It's going to be a blast.
That's great. And hey, an hour and 30 minute drive in Toronto, that gets you down to about the lake, right?
it was 50 minutes coming home. We left it just before dinner time. And it was an hour and a half to get there, and then only 50 minutes getting back. Okay,
well,
so,
that's good. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the state of the Argonauts roster. Like you mentioned, 22, you were part of setting a great foundation there. I don't want to use the term surprise Grey Cup team. I don't know if that's fair, but still a team that got really hot, won a championship, and then 23 blew the doors off everybody, right? 16-2. You mentioned stumbled in the playoffs, but then there were still a lot of guys around for 24 when, again, the team goes on another Grey Cup run, a tremendous three-year period. 2025, obviously not as hot, this team only winning five games. What do you make of the current roster, and what do you see as priorities across the board?
Well, obviously, anybody who watched the team play, major struggles along the offensive line. I think losing to John Allen, who had been the, you know, up for MOP and things like that. When you have a strong guy like that, Now you take a guy like Ryan Hunter, who when he can play guard is as good as there is in the league, and try to move him out to tackle, and you got guys moving around playing different positions. They had a ton of injury issues, which I think was a problem for them. And again, the big thing, I think you build the team from the inside out, and you better be good on the offensive line. And you better be good on the defensive line. Mike Holmgren once told me, he said, I've been with some great teams. But, for example, when he was in Green Bay, until we got Reggie White, who was that guy who stirs the drink, who just gave our defense a presence, we were never what, you know, as good as we could be. So that's the goal, is to get defensive players who can become that type of impact leader and get offensive players that can protect a guy that I think is as good a quarterback as the league has had in a long time. I've been fortunate to have had on teams I've either coached. I've coached Anthony Calvillo, Doug Flutie, a couple of the great ones. I've had Ricky Ray when I was a GM, and so I've been close and watched him, and so I've been around some of the great ones. I honestly believe Chad Kelly, with just playing football on the football field, is in the category with those guys. So can he stay healthy? The kind of injury he had was a rare one, you know. It was and then the rehab on it. There were some issues with how the bone took, but if that comes along and he returns, the whole key in this league is you better have a quarterback who you can say can take you to win the Grey Cup. And with him, we have that. We have a guy, Nick Arbuckle, that has won the Grey Cup. Now, he like Chad in the 22 game. Chad comes in the second half when McLeod Bethel Thompson got hurt and brings home a victory. I mean, it was a tough game. We were a little bit behind. Chad brings us back. We win the game. And then he goes on the 16-2 run. So I think he's shown what he can do in this league. And he's going to, you know, like I say, a lot of the fortunes of this club rest on his shoulders. So it's exciting. We like a lot of the young receivers we have here, you know, in Coxey and Mekhi Polk and Kevin Mattel and John Brissett. I mean, Jake Herslow is a young guy that really showed some ability. There's a lot of young players with ability. Now, Coach Miller, it's his job to put it all together. The offensive line, it needs work, and we'll do that. And like I say, on defense, he's hiring a defensive coordinator. Again, it's not finalized yet, but he's hiring somebody who sees the game like he does. And I think that's what's most important. And then it's my job to, you know, understand what that is and go out and get the players that allow them to do what they want to do.
Obviously, ratio can look different for every team, but Toronto was one of few last year that had an All-American secondary and pretty consistently started 4 Canadian offensive linemen, in some cases even 5. Is there a chance that could change come 2026?
Oh, I think that's always a work in progress. Salary caps change things. You know, players move to other places. You know, you have to get the best Canadians you can get and then fill around them. Right now, that's what we're doing. We're trying to see which Canadians to tell you we're going to play 5 on offense and 2 on defense. I can't do that. I mean, I just can't. I mean, it's just, we just don't know what's going to happen. We have a couple of young guys in the pipeline in Luigi Villain, who's been in the, you know, touring the NFL for the last 2 years, and Paris Shand that was in last year's draft out of LSU, a big defense. That's 2 big defensive ends. Mm-hmm. Well, if both those guys, if you can get them, that's going to change your ratio. When you have Jeremiah Ojo, now, do you make that a Canadian spot? Those are the kind of decisions, again, you can't make now, but those are the kinds of things you discuss. So do I know if Luigi, I I guarantee you, I've already called on Luigi in Paris, and they're not ready to sign yet. But, you know, you never know when that's going to change. You know, they go to enough trials, or they go to enough, and they say, you know what, I need to play. I need to get on the field. And that's what we try to preach to them is you need, while you're young, to get on the field and play. You need to show what you can do, and that's what we're hoping can happen with those guys. If it doesn't, then again, we've got two young guys. I know Parrish and Chatfield are two young players who have shown flashes. Again, it's our job to take, and we have to mold around what we have, and that's changing by the day. You won't know until we go to training camp and you see our final roster what are the possibilities. We have Cam Judge, obviously, who had a great year, I thought, at Will linebacker. And, you know, that's a Canadian player that, you know, you count on things like that. But if you don't have a great player behind him and he gets hurt, and another plan of what to do Canadian-wise, because there's one Cam Judge. There's one Canadian linebacker that plays the way Cam Judge does, and that's Cam Judge. I mean, Mike Varisuk or Devin Varisuk in Hamilton, he's a great player in his own right, but they're different. Mm-hmm. And with what we need, Cam Judge does that well. So, again, it everything changes, John, so fast. And that, to me, is one of the things that you have to, in personnel, understand, is you have to anticipate what's the next move going to be. When that happens, where are we going to get our... That's the greatest thing about the CFL. It's what I love the ratio. I mean, people think it waters down the play, and maybe, but it's in terms of the challenges of it and putting teams together, makes it so exciting. It's like, how easy is it in the NFL to just go get the very best players you can find? It doesn't matter. Here, we got to do other more things. Like I say, it's intriguing, and I love it. There's nothing I would rather be doing than working on rosters and trying to get into coaches' heads on what they want. And that's what my job is to understand what they want. It's not what I want. It's what they want. Now I got to go and find that for them. And I think my history as a coach helps me do that. And I have to get these young guys that haven't coached to understand how to get that out and how to read a coach and understand what he really wants. Because honestly, a lot of coaches don't know what they really want. Mm. I mean, there was a lot of times as a coach, I thought I knew what I wanted, but I didn't really, until I got it, okay, that's it. But how do you describe that? So
right.
It's you know how that goes.
For sure. And as a ratio guy myself, yeah, there are detractors who will say, oh, waters this don't want. Well, then you got teams like the Saskatchewan Rough Riders starting four Canadians to win the Grey Cup and in their receiving core, right? Or you've got teams like Winnipeg, or John Huffnagel did this for years in Calgary, starting 8-9 Canadians well above and still having success. So I'm excited to see how the Toronto Argonauts ratio looks in 2026, especially post-draft, a great NCAA draft coming up. So we'll see how that shakes out. I'll get you out on this one, Jim. Obviously you've got, you know, your footing and your history in the coaching world and the personnel world. You've also done a lot of media work. So I'm curious, how would you say the work experience is between media and between working in football? In other words, is it more fun? Is it more work doing football or talking about football?
Well, doing football like what I'm doing now for me is way more fun. Television was great. I worked with fantastic people. Again, it's one of those things that's so different. When you're doing TV, like I always looked at it as it's about entertainment. And the key is to keep people interested and watching, give them things that they can't get from anybody. And I thought I brought a little different perspective in terms of having been a assistant coach, a head coach, a general manager. And, you know, I've done all those things. And so my perspective on different things, on why teams do this or do that, you know, I thought I could bring something special to the broadcast. And, you know, obviously the new people, Paul Graham left this year, and, you know, Chris Edwards and Arden, they came in and they didn't think I was what the station needed. And I had a contract. I thought I was going to work, and it was a difficult year for me, but that's, you know, that's that business. And I didn't know that business. I'm glad I'm back in a business that I understand, where everything is right. You know, if you're losing games, you are going to, you know, you're going to get canned. That's you need to make sure you find ways to win games. In the media, you don't know. You know, I mean, I'm older. And is that why? I don't know. I got a contract. I thought I was going to get, they told me I was going to get, I never did. Now, again, that's the way the media works then. But that was difficult for me. This was one of the toughest years I've ever gone through, just because of the lack of understanding of what was happening. And, you know, they're not as upfront. I mean, when you get fired in coaching, or you get, you know, like, I mean, I've had time when I was with the Argonauts, my first time, I never got fired in 99. I was a head coach. We made the playoffs. And I went in and my key didn't work at the office. And that's how I found out. So I didn't, you know, you don't always get fired. You just, they sold the team, and that was that. They, oh yeah, we should have called you. You know, everything got finalized. And so, you know, I like this because I know if we win games, which is what I'm hired to do, to help Mike Miller win games, then I'll have a job. And you know what? I treat people right. I'm forward with players. I tell them the truth. Sometimes it's hard, but when you do that, it seems like you can get jobs. And again, I'm older now, and I was worried. I didn't know what was going to happen, but it, you know, for me, everything worked out exactly as it should. I appreciate TSN. I appreciate everything they did for me. I enjoyed the experience. Kate Burness made it fantastic. Milt Stegall, Matt Dunnigan, those guys were fantastic. You know, Davis Sanchez and Enoch, younger guys that both, you know, Davis played for me. So that was always a fun interaction. Then Enoch came in last year. He was more this year when I wasn't working, so I didn't get a chance to work with him much. But, you know, watching those guys, you know, they're having fun and they're doing things the right way. And the producers do a fantastic job. And, you know, Straight Fire was I loved it because I started out as a Pop Warner coach, and being able to take young kids playing football, boys, girls, men, women, and take a play they made and actually make it that to me is what we need to do in the media. We need to make our game better. So I love Straight Fire, and I thought Straight Fire wasn't as good without me. But that's just my own personal opinion. So yeah, it's, you know, I don't know what to say about it, but media was great. It was outstanding. Great people. Everything was fantastic. I wasn't real excited with how the whole thing came down in the end. But that's not. It's their business, and it's the way that happens. And I know now, you know, that's the way it is there. So again, I'm at that point. If I can do this for the rest of my living days, I'll be the happiest man on the planet, because I get in here early. I'm around Mike Miller, sitting right in the next office. I've got Marcus Grandison, young video, our personnel guy, right in the next office, just waiting to come in so we can get started on today, looking at which free agents we want to look at, we're going to go through some film together. So it's, doesn't get better than this, John. Just doesn't.
That's all. Well, I can feel the passion radiating from the screen, which is great. It is a little bit alarming, I will say, to hear someone who works in professional football say, man, I'm so glad I have job security in pro football, not like that shaky media business, because as someone who would like to do this for a long time, it's a little disconcerting, but I appreciate the honesty, I do, and we appreciate your time today, Jim. Congrats on getting back in with the Argos, and I'm excited to see what the Devil Blue look like come training camp. It's a team that needs a bounce back. You got a tough schedule this year. You're going on the road 12 times, so you're got to have that roster ready to go.
It's, you know what, exactly as it needs to be. I mean, the one thing that Mike O'Shea, you know, I know when he was looking at this job, that was one thing that didn't bother him at all, because everything ends up being exactly as it needs to be. And I'm going to look at it as we're going to have a lot of young players, and we're not going to be in Toronto. We're going to all be living together out in Guelph, where we're able to go and we do our practices out there, and we get to travel to other places, and basically as our unit become a true unit. And that's going to help us down the stretch when we do get to play in our stadium in front of our fans. I feel bad for the fans, but that's not, you know, it's uncontrollable, and it's what was decided. So you embrace it. You know, it's that's one thing I learned in the CFL. You can fight about everything. And it's kind of, when I was a Division III coach, you quibble over things that really you shouldn't be. You should be just loving the game and loving the kids that are playing the game and the players that we have. And that's the way I choose to look at it. So, no, I'm excited about the schedule. I'm excited. No team's ever done what we're going to do. You know, we're going to be on the road till August. It's going to be a great experience, and these guys can leave a mark that nobody else ever can.
There you go. I think that's a good attitude, embracing the challenge, and we'll see how you guys do. Again, I'm looking forward to it, and we appreciate your time again on the Three Down Nation podcast, Jim. All best to you and the Argos. Happy holidays in the meantime.
Thank you, John.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.